Hello and welcome. I'm Alexander.
And I'm Simon.
And I'm Haney.
We are Native in Tech, covering the latest from the IT industry with a specific focus on Microsoft and how to get actual value from technology. This is episode 306, the second of two episodes we're tentatively calling Simon's Brain. You will be able to find this, not the brain, the episode, and our previous episodes on nativeintech.com, iTunes, Spotify, and on most podcasting platforms. This is the second part of the two-part episode we called Simon's Brain. If you haven't listened to the first one, you probably want to do that to get a proper context, but here we are going back to the second part, so dive in.
I've been better and better at taking in what they've said to me, but that's an episode in itself. But it's really been I always try to, and I said that to a manager of me and Alex once. I see my life and every conversation I'm in as a game of chess. And my problem is that I want to understand every single possible next step and control them in detail. Otherwise,
that sounds
I don't feel comfortable.
Really stressful.
That's exactly what my manager said. But that's how I view my life. That's why I have a really hard time making decisions. Because whenever I go into make a decision, I see, okay, if I do this, then this will happen, and this will happen, and this will happen, and this will happen. And like, you can't control everything. So therapists, again, have said that you should sometimes just force yourself to make a decision. And Haney really wants to say something now.
I have so many thoughts, but I'm going to go back to your, you know, you're hardly ever satisfied with your session.
Yeah.
And I would kind of like challenge you to think that, is it only like two extremes that it can be? That, you know, you're satisfied and things went well versus, you know, things you made a mistake, so things went, you're not satisfied.
Yeah, absolutely. If it's not perfect, it's not good.
All right. Well,
yeah.
I would remind you that life is more granular than that. For each of your sessions, there's countless moments that you go through, and not every single moment is gonna, you know, make an impact on the listener that they're gonna go like, "Oh, this session sucked," or "I didn't get something out of this session," or something like that. So kind of what has helped me personally is to look at those things more granularly and force myself to choose that, hey, I choose that I need to find some things that went well from my presentation, some concrete things. Even if I'm not satisfied, I need to recognize that there were moments that were good. And just kind of like, I can force myself to do that. I can be like, hey, if I take a magnifying glass, yes, I can find some parts that are actually good. Like, I did that intro was excellent. I started off really strong. Yes, my outro sucked, but I'm not looking at that at the moment. My intro was actually really good. And I actually choose to focus on those things every time I do a session. I pick what are the things that I actually did well, so I can encourage myself. Because who's going to encourage you if you're not going to encourage yourself?
And that right there, I think, is pivotal. What you just said, who's going to encourage you if you cannot encourage yourself? We are exceptionally good at, as human beings, at emotional and mental judo. We know exactly where all our skeletons are buried. And in the dead of night, we are completely alone in our heads. And that's where the really scary conversations are, right? And if you can't figure out how to, well, essentially be kind to yourself. This is also, I want to, for full transparency, this is an excellent way of saying, do what I say, not what I do.
Exactly.
Because I'm really not good at this. And we're back to the whole external, internal. So from my perspective, try this on for size. You're born in 1990. So that makes me 12 years your senior. I look at you and I see someone who has achieved it all, is absolutely exceptional at most things he does, and I could pretty much kill to be in your shoes. I look at Haney and see one of the coolest people I've ever met, like literally the coolest people. So insightful, calm, able to read around things that I would never in a million years have thought of. This is me looking at you, at the projections that you choose to show. Sure, yeah. I know both of you pretty well, so I can probably see underneath the covers a bit. But hey, at the end of the day, it's a 1-2 punch. It's what you decide to show. It's what I want to see.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's all about me comparing and failing miserably in my own eyes. So taking what you just said, Haney, looking at the two of you, what you've achieved, and comparing that to what I've achieved, I could probably easily find things that I've achieved that would make you jealous as well.
Of course.
It's so easy to just forget about this and then focus entirely on your shortcomings. I think that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And just to point out, I don't do this perfectly either, but it's something that I've noticed is beneficial to actually shift the focus on the successes as well. And it's what I practice still. It's not that I succeed every single time or anything like that, but I try. I keep trying because it works.
Yeah. Where are we going next?
I think we can keep going with this whole work-life balance because...
Yeah. It's placed into the next thing because... And I'm starting to feel exhausted because it's challenging to talk about these things. I'm usually very good at it when I'm a little bit drunk, and now I'm sober. That's what happens when you drink too much beer with me. I get very emotional, but kind.
Yes, he does.
I haven't drank enough beer with Simon, clearly.
I haven't been to Finland yet.
I know, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, we're next time, episode 600.
Yes, that's a promise.
No, but I do think that something that I envy with Alexander is your ability to actually, in my view, separating work from a lot of your personal life, and where I feel and see that you have been very successful. In everything you have done in terms of your hobbies, you're very, very talented in a lot of things. Like you said, that might not be useful, but still is very inspiring or something that you value very highly. In terms of your Star Wars interest, thing when you do craft, when you craft things with all of your tools, like you have so many skills. That I envy, that because I don't have them. You know everything about how, like, medicine, like you know so much that I couldn't even start to fit into my poor brain. And I'm very envious on that separation of things you do, because that's something that I struggle with, and which is kind of odd because I'm also, as I see it, very good at be two different personalities at work and off work. And I say this with sort of a smile, but I've talked to my wife about this in terms of work-life balance and my different personas. And we are both very much in agreement of that my wife would never, ever married work Simon. Because he is
luckily
a completely
she
yeah exactly luckily she made, like I said, a long-term investment in the original Simon before Venom got in, or I don't know, this is something you know, Alex, a super villain that changes face, but like that's very different, and that's something that I struggle with in terms of separating things, both from a personality level, but also that my continuous desire to keep my work in one separate container and my personal life in a separate container, having two phones, having two calendars, multiple accounts, all of these things, sometimes is very challenging and also stressful. So my desire to have separate things and keep these things separate to get the most of both of them actually in many occasions just drives me even more nuts.
And I can tell you why. This is something that I've been considering a fair bit of time. One of the things that I think I've told you to your face is that you absolutely would benefit from a burnout, like a proper industrial-sized burnout in your face.
Did not expect to hear this.
And then when you pick yourself back off the ground, then you would be absolutely unstoppable. Because what you're doing is you're separating. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's great. Then you'd left your whole ability to math somewhere else. Because it's not one plus one. It's 19 plus 64. And you still want the whole thing to fit into one person in one day. It doesn't work that way, Simon.
Have you heard about quantum?
Yeah. Not quantum, not AI is going to help you. No, so seriously, you are you're trying to stuff so much into your life because we're back to FOMO. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you have the energy, you have the ability to do so much more than mere mortals.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But not exactly as much as you would like. Which in turn means that you fumble things. Most specifically, you have a calendar challenge.
Yeah.
Or multiple calendars.
Exactly, multiple. Yeah. And I can tell you, having multiple calendars doesn't add more hours to
it doesn't.
No.
It just confuses things. I understand this challenge of time and calendars way too well and wish I was much better at it. And in a way, I feel it would be much easier to just have one calendar. Mm-hmm. It would keep it in one place and not in multiple places. But instead, there's many accounts and many calendars, etc. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that you're able to separate kind of your work Simon and outside work Simon, real life Simon. How does that work?
It doesn't, since a lot of my self-image is built on top of work, Simon.
Uh-huh. Oh,
what
yeah,
have I,
that's
what
a problem.
Have I achieved in my personal life that I'm proud of? Except having a fantastic wife, a beautiful daughter, all of those tiny things.
But a wonderful house. You're in good health. Et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
You might have a whiskey bottle or two.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing. And I think that's one of the takeaways from these episodes, that I'm aware of all of this. I'm very much aware of how blessed I am. But it doesn't matter, because I'm not pleased with what I've achieved in my work life. And it's very important to me, because that's how people see me.
And that or is... That's the concept of the moving goalpost.
Yeah, I've never I'm good at running, but that's only because I moved a goalpost so far ahead of myself.
I totally understand. Like, I think we all have a little bit of different sides of ourselves. We show in different contexts. Like, I definitely I don't necessarily talk that much about my personal life at work. I do some things, but I kind of pick and choose what I talk about, and depends on the people I'm around, how well do I actually know them and things like that. But then I try to be really authentically me for the most part. Because it's really hard to try to be somebody else.
Well, it depends on what you mean with that. Mm-hmm. I don't usually talk about this. And not many people know. I had an interesting experience to the tune of a very severe depression back in the early 2000s. And I wasn't different people, but I had different skills. Mm. I didn't matter. Alexander did not matter. If you needed a photographer, if you needed a medic, if you needed a pilot, if you needed insert whatever, I was your guy. But that was my skills that mattered. Mm. I never mattered. Mm. And it took me years and years and years before I started to matter, because not until I started to matter, my opinions started to matter, and then I could use that to build. So, yes, depending on what you mean, Haney, I see what you're at.
Yeah, and I can actually 100% relate with what you just told, because it might not be evident, but like my biggest insecurity growing up was like that point that I was pointing at, that I wasn't the life of the party. I wasn't the funny one. I wasn't the interesting one or anything like that. So, you know, that was my insecurity. But as you said, it's kind of like figuring out that it's okay to be different than other people are. And that's kind of the beauty. And being okay with what you yourself are, then it's like much easier to be in one's own skin. But it sounds much easier than it is in practice.
And also, just when talking about this, and we are going to go into like, personally, I think we as a community should talk about more about this, but I'm also a very emotional person. So I like to talk about these things, and I like to help others. I consider myself much better at helping others than helping myself.
That is often easier.
Yes.
Do what I say, don't do what I do.
Exactly. I lost my train of thought.
We as a community?
Not that, but now I remember. Just imagine taking everything we have said so far, adding on that I'm stressed out and I'm not supposed to be stressed out.
Uh-huh.
So then I stress about not being able to handle my stress, because I know exactly how I should do it. I just fail in a spectacular way at doing so. So that just adds to it that I must be better. I must be less stressed. I must be more aware. I must be kinder to myself. And I'm neither of all of those things on a daily basis.
So, see what you think of this, Haney. Mm-hmm. To come back to what you said, Simon, I can do 1,000 things, right? Mm-hmm. 1,000 completely useless things and probably 1,000 very useful things. That's
all about context.
Yes. But I can learn anything. And that's what I do on my downtime, my non-working day. I love learning things. I love figuring things out. I taught myself watchmaking. I can't deal with the deep insides of a watch movement. That's beyond me. But I taught myself to assemble and build watches, right? That's how I relax. That's what gives me joy, learning new things with my hands, with my head. Compare that to reading a book. Parking your ass in a chair, reading a book. Your mind is not working, so to speak, to try to learn something new. I love reading a book.
It's building a whole world.
Yes. You're walking into a different world. So, do I really relax when I'm learning things, or am I just trying to tell myself that I'm relaxing because I enjoy it? So what does relaxing mean? What should I do? Am I driving myself into the wall by doing what I think is fun? And how do we figure out what really works, and how do we figure out what really in reality hurts us?
Oh, such a $1,000 question. Or
yeah, but I think this question. I think this is your question, Haney.
Yeah.
No pressure.
This is so tricky. Like, I don't have a straight off answer for you. It's not a yes or no answer, of course, as you would probably guess. Only you can know the answer, actually, whether that is true or not. Mm. But oftentimes, if we have just one way we can be to kind of express something, to relax, or to, you know, if always to relax, we have to act. If always to relax, we have to sit on the couch and watch Netflix. Mm. If always to relax, we have to do XYZ. Oftentimes, that is maybe a sign that maybe there could be something else. This is very much from personal experience. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, hey, is this really what I need? Because, you know, our days are different, our life changes over time, etc. So how can we expect that we always need the same thing? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's trying to find, you know, what do I actually need in this moment? Do I need to do something? It could be that, yes, it's actually something that will help you relax, help you express yourself, be okay with who you are, etc. Or it could be that I just need to go for a walk and stare into the distance and breathe. That's what I need today. So I would say most of the time we humans are actually very versatile and we just put ourselves into like boxes that this is what I always do. And it is, of course, it has the comfort of familiarity if we always do the same thing. So to some extent, it will help us because it's like a learned pattern. If we always do it to relax, it will actually help us do that. But in a lot of cases, there is also other options that we could use. I don't know if that's helpful at all.
I
think it is. And the whole pattern. So one of the things that frustrated me the most when I did martial arts was kata. Kata can be roughly translated to form, and it is a specific set of movements, depending on which martial art you do, that is supposed to be done in a very ritualized way. And it just bothered me to no end. I knew what I needed to do. Let's get on with it. It took my wife, who happens to be a Japanese teacher and has a 33rd level black belt in relaxing for reasons, to explain to me that the whole point was for the kata to be a framework.
Yeah.
To let your brain get used to the pattern, repeat the pattern, so you could disassociate from it and suddenly, well, not be busy doing other things. I think it's sort of kind of the same. You do a meditation, Heidi.
Very similar. And I would maybe, I'm picking on a word, disassociate. Are you sure it's disassociating or being present?
Yes.
And kind of sinking into present. Just yes. letting things flow.
It might be disassociating from this innate feeling that you need to do something.
Yes.
But I agree, your choice is better.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense.
Yeah. And speaking about like being in the moment, because that's, I remember the first time one of my therapists told me that you should do like some kind of mindfulness. And I'm very, very skeptical to all of these things. For like, I'm a religious person, so I'm used to believing things that I can't see and doing things that makes absolutely no sense in some people's eyes. But these like meditation, mindfulness, all of that has been very, very far from me until I actually tried it and relaxed into it. And I like meditation, whichever way works for you. I think that's also important that exactly. I've done like guided meditations, which has been great. But just last week when I was in Palm Springs at the event, I took my breakfast with me, walked over to my patio at my room or house that I had, and just sat there watching the flowers, the colibris, all of that, and put away my phones. And without knowing it, actually just I were there. Didn't think about anything other than enjoying that it was silent, beautiful. I had absolutely nothing that I needed to do, and enjoyed my very American bagel for breakfast. So sometimes I think that's where we need to figure out. And I think that's to some extent what you do, Alex, that you can really be present in whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of what you're doing is down to focus and also relaxation. You can't, and now correct me if I'm wrong, but you can't think too much to be very successful at many of the things you do. You need to feel it.
Yes and no. And I think that's one of the things that I fool myself into believing, because that sounds good. But I also think that I spend way too much time thinking about stuff.
Mm.
So there's a better than 50-50 chance that I am not really relaxing in a way that I would like to. Mm. So definitely. And I agree with you, the whole mindfulness mumbo jumbo crap. I didn't buy that for a second. And then I tried it, not by choice.
Yeah.
It was that or not have a great time. And it's different for everybody. It's not the one fix stop solution thingy for everyone. It is a tool, and used correctly, it can be very, very beneficial. And I think that's one of the takeaways that we also need to push, that there are no quick fixes, and there is, don't buy the idea that someone can tell you what you should do. Mm. We're back to the whole external, internal, you must figure out what works for you. If you figure out how to listen to yourself, let me know, because I would like to learn more about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think kind of what is similar to all of these things we've been talking about in this latest part is that, you know, doing your hobbies, sitting on the patio, mindfulness, those are things that can help us be present and be okay with how things are in the moment. Mm. And so I think, you know, one can think out of the box. What helps me do that? Is it going for a walk? That might be something that's really helpful for some, or doing some stretching you know, reading a book, even though it can build a whole new world in your mind, but you have to really be in the moment and not skip ahead 10 pages in your mind and so forth. So
that aspect
is just really helpful.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's challenging for us and other trades that have your actual work as a hobby. That some might feel that, hey, I like to do these labs or these investigations or experiments with IT. And that's something I do outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good. Like, that's one of my hobbies too. But if we might be tricking ourselves into that we are relaxing when we do that, because it's very hard to disassociate that from what you do at work.
Yeah.
And that's like, as you said with Netflix, think about next time you watch Netflix, are you doing it because you really want to, or because you're trying to suppress something you don't want to think of? If you take a walk, and this is something that I've done and started to be more aware of, if you take a walk and you listen to a podcast while walking, what are you actually trying to achieve? Are you learning, relaxing, or trying to suppress something you don't want to think of when you're alone in the forest and only have yourself, the birds, and the badgers to listen to?
Yeah, I think that that's a really important point, and I think it's an interesting specific challenge in our field, like how to balance that. And when I started off having no background, like I would do so many things on my free time trying to catch up, because of course, like I was starting from zero and others were way ahead of me, and I was just trying to catch up on everything in the first years. And I managed to do that pretty well. Plus, I was like always stretching for the work things. If I needed to do more to get things done, I would. And yeah, my days were occasionally very, very insane. Luckily, I learned from that. I was really tired at one point, and I did actually learn from that. And I've kind of realized and taken some learnings from sport to this, because if you train for sport, you have to have the right balance of like having a like a training load and then having the proper amount of rest. And that is affected by how much you sleep, do you get good nutrition, etc. So you need also the rest periods. So for me, it was helpful to think like if I was training for something, I would not be doing it 24/7. That would, well, even, you know, 10 hours a day, I would not do that. That would make no sense in whatsoever. So kind of trying to remind me that actually the moments when I take some time off, those actually make it possible for me to learn better when I do get to like actually catching up with something or trying something out, etc. But it needs that balance point with it.
There's a reason why I get most of my really good ideas in the shower.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
There are tons of things that we haven't talked about and that I would love to talk about, in terms of that a lot of work in terms of hours doesn't necessarily need to like imply a lot of stress. I think one of my happiest moments were the same assignment that I talked about in the beginning of the former episode. But I was in total control of that project. I worked, I think I worked 150%. So I worked 60 hours per week for 9-10 months straight and felt great during that entire time, because I was in charge of my time. I worked a lot because I chose to work a lot, and I controlled my own time. And I've had experiences where I haven't worked not even 40 hours a week and felt incredibly stressed because I'm not in control. So do we think that we have anything else that we should talk about before we start to wrap up, or should we come back to someone else's brain at a later date?
I think we definitely should come back to someone else's brain. And I want to put in a slight point to what you just said. I agree with that, but I would also like to say perceived control.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You might not necessarily need to have control, but you need to think you do or be able to.
Yes.
And then I think that is one of the more unexpected things for me, that, as you said, it doesn't matter really how much work you do. It's what you feel you have control, which also brings us back to the whole internal versus external. Take the MVP program, for example. Nobody knows what it takes to stay in or get into the program. That's the way it is. That's the way it's always been. And for someone like me who need to have a bar, because if I don't have a bar, then I will just keep achieving. And we've all concluded that we're all of us pretty capable people, which means that we are also pretty capable of driving ourselves into the ground if we don't have anything to compare us to. So, yeah. But as you said, we are we're running out of time for these episodes.
Who would have known?
Who would have known, indeed. but I definitely think that we should revisit a brain or a couple of brains in the future. Also, very curious to hear what our listeners think of this conversation. So please reach out and give us feedback on this one.
Was it of any use to kind of hear what goes on in other people's brains?
And if no one feels anything of what we feel, please reach out to us so we can talk to you.
Yes,
because we are willing to pay for that insight. Yeah.
Indeed. And that brings us to the end of the second part of the episodes that we called Simon's Brain. It turned out to be a lot more than just Simon's Brain. We'll be back next week with a reasonably normal episode, whatever normal means, but you're going to find out next week. Until then, have a good one. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you for listening to this episode of Native in Tech. Native in Tech is a weekly technology podcast hosted by Alexander Arvidsson, Simon Binder, and Heini Ilmarinen. If you have any feedback, questions, or would like to be part of an episode, please reach out to us on social media or via email at podcast@nativeintech.com.